Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm with Christopher John O'Shea. Christopher,
yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. It's great to be with you.
All right. We're on an open show tonight. Last week we were doing a talk about war and gold, and I thought that was pretty interesting because he walked us through the history of gold and money and how debt and government policies and how it's operated back, you know, almost 700 years he took us back. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, given his standing too, you know, a real player on the world scene.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was a good talk, and we're tonight on an open show, so it's 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and be the guest and ask your question and decide the topic tonight, whatever you'd like it to be, whether it's the stock market or IRAs or estate planning or income taxes or insurances or company benefits, whatever the case may be, we can address it for you. And that's what we're here for.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Elder care. I mean, there's just a number of topics that we've heard of, we haven't heard on for a little while. So
our whole desire to do this show is merely to educate people about what we consider to be professional financial advising, that a financial advisor should be able to go over all areas of personal finances without any difficulty and address those topics for you. And they should do it without economic bias, and they should do it as a fiduciary standard, and they should do it independently as possible, not working for brokerage firms, insurance companies, or banks. That's our thought process toward how real financial planning is done. There's no law that says that's the way it is. It's just our opinion as to how it's done, and that's why we do the show, and that's why we enjoy answering your calls and questions, and that's why we enjoy interviewing people that we feel can bring relevance to helping you manage your personal finances as best as possible. And the learning, we learn from it also. So that's another reason why we do it.
Sure. Next week we have a guy who's going to come on. He's just studied crises, market crises, going back since the country's history, its beginnings. And so, again, give the long-term perspective. You know, the market goes up and it goes down last week, and, you know, people start commenting and start thinking, rethinking what they're doing, and that's not the time to rethink.
Right.
You know, in the middle of a
and that book is John Moynihan, Next Time Will Be Different?
Or? That's right.
Is that what it's called?
Moynihan's. It sure is. Monahan's.
Right. Monahan. Moynihan. With, you know.
Those Irish people.
It's one of
they all
Irish.
Sound alike.
Before Italians. I go to any of our other callers, 410-922-6680, I want to answer a question that somebody emailed me. Hans from a company called PDP Group emailed me a question, and it says, I plan for my retirement. What type of investments would be needed for maximum income while minimizing market volatility? So the answer to that question is there's really only two ways that I can think of that he's going to be able to accomplish this. One is he uses a no-commission-oriented guaranteed withdrawal annuity where he can maximize his income as long as he doesn't worry about whether his principal is absolutely there in the future and he's not worried about flexibility of taking larger sums of money in the future. So that's one option. The other is to do a conservative invested portfolio, something like 40% stock, 60% bonds, to minimize some of the volatility. And then he just does an automatic withdrawal. On a total return basis, he was withdrawing 4 or 5% a year off of the account, and he has an incredibly high percentage probability that that account will still be there 30, 40 years from now if he lives that long. And his other question was, how can I get the income stream from mutual funds without the paperwork of withdrawal every month? And most companies, brokerage firms or insurance companies, will do an automatic. Once you set it up, automatic, you don't have to ever sign anything again. It just comes out. And so And there are a couple ways to do it. And so, you know, it's not a simple question to answer because there's so many variables in
sure.
it. But that's
yep.
about as simplistically as I can put it, you know, that there are, you either have a conservative portfolio or you just let an insurance company guarantee you some kind of income for the rest of your life and not worry about how your investments are performing, knowing that during your lifetime you're going to get what you want. So let's go to our callers. First, we're going to start with Lee in Towson. Lee, how can we help you?
I wanted to ask about this idea of putting real estate investments into an IRA. I mean, some people were promoting that. I was just wondering how that would work when it comes time for mandatory withdrawals.
That's a very good question, Lee, because, yes, you can put real estate in. So let's say I had an IRA account worth, let's just use the number, $500,000. And I wanted to buy a house that I was going to renovate, and it was going to cost me $250,000 to buy it and to renovate it. And then I was going to rent it, okay? I can do that. I just have to have an IRA custodian who will allow it, and that's normally a self-trusted IRA, such as Sterling Trust Company. Is a typical one that does this kind of stuff. There's a ton of them out there, U.S. Trust Company of America and so forth, that'll allow you to do that. Now, there's a lot of complications, though. Number one, you don't ever want to borrow money when you're doing an IRA with real estate holdings in it. That's just going to cause problems that I don't even want to begin to boggle your mind with. So it always has to be done in cash, in my opinion. And number two, when it comes time to do your RMDs, you're going to have to get an appraised value on that real estate. You're going to have to get a real estate appraiser to come in every year, value that real estate so that you can show the IRS that you have a real fair market value to determine what your RMD is for the next year. So there's a lot of complication to it. It's got some good points. And here's another key thing, Lee, and this is a big problem that people make when they put real estate or businesses into an IRA, which you can put a business in an IRA. If there's any personal involvement in the business, so in other words, or the real estate. So let's say I buy a piece of real estate down in Ocean City, and I go and use it myself every once in a while because I, you know, hey, it's down at the ocean, there's nobody here this week, I'm going to go down with my family and use it. Boom! That now is considered a prohibited transaction, and that whole real estate could be considered a withdrawal from your IRA. You have to be real careful when you do these types of things, that you have good advice, that you don't perform what's called a prohibited transaction. So those are just three of the complications. I hope that's enough to give you some good advice and to also possibly discourage you from doing it if you really weren't sure if you wanted to do it. All right, sir?
Thanks.
All right, buddy. Take care. That was a good question, you know.
It is.
And it's a very complicated area, and it can be very rewarding if you do it right. Linda, we're going to have to – what do you want to do, Noah? You want Linda to hold? We're going to Linda. Linda, Noah was so kind to let you ask your question now.
Okay, so I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are, and so
okay,
am I.
My question is, on the radio, sometimes I hear about these financial vendors that – promise 8% right off the top and then guaranteed 7% for the life of handing over your retirement money to them. But they never say to you what happens after your retirement, like when you pass and your heirs, do your heirs get it? I mean, because it's so appealing, that kind of interest rate.
So, okay, let's step back and think about what these people are actually saying. My opinion, this is probably one of the foremost, what's a good word for it, Chris, without being, well,
it's a deception.
It's a misrepresentation. A potential manipulative way of presenting the information to lure people into something may mm-hmm. not be as good as they make it out to be.
Sure. Well,
oxygen. I'm back.
Right. Oxygen. You good?
Yeah. I don't know what happened. So let's start off with the guaranteed 8%, Linda, okay?
Right.
So you get that right up front. You put in $100,000, they say, or $10,000, and you get a bonus of $800 on $10,000. Boom, $800 in your pocket. Pretty cool, right? Well, here's the point. The bonus that you're getting, the 8% or the 6% or whatever they're guaranteeing you, is really just them paying you back your own money that you're going to pay them over the life of the annuity. And you say, well, how is that? They gave me 8% right up front. Well, the key is that if you look at these contracts, they have what's called a guaranteed surrender charge also. So if you leave that contract in the first 5 or 10 or 15 years even, they're going to hit you with a surrender charge of 10% or something in that magnitude. That surrender charge guarantees them that they're going to get their bonus back from you if you leave that annuity before a certain point in time. Well, let's say you stay the whole time and you get the surrender charges are waived. Did you get the bonus? The answer is no. Because if you look at these annuities, you'll see that you're going to be paying fees to the insurance company of somewhere in 3 to 5% per year in fees. Over 10 years, you've paid them 30% just in fees, let alone the money they're going to make on your money by investing it or something of that sort.
And right, but it's not only...
well, we haven't gone into the second part yet. I'm just explaining the bonus first.
Right, but it's not just insurance companies. It's also private, you know, financial people that advertise on the radio.
No, but they're selling the annuities.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, that's all they're doing. They're just, they're a firm like mine, but they're commission-oriented people, and they're selling an annuity that's going to do this. So it's an insurance product they're offering you.
But they never talk about what happens after you die to the money.
Okay, so now here comes the second part. So now how do they guarantee you 7% per year? So there's two different people I've heard out there. There's one person who's talking about a 7% income distribution to you every year. So it sounds like you're making 7% on your money, but that's not what he's actually saying. He's saying is you're going to get 7% distribution every year. And at the end of the time, Linda, if you made 7%, your family will get all of the principal back that was invested. But if that investment only makes 2%, that means 5% per year was coming out of your principal, and there's a chance that your family might not get anything back at the end of 10 or 15 years or 20 years or however long it is you live.
Uh-huh.
There's another guy out there who's talking about 7%. And the way he's maneuvering the numbers to make it sound like it is he's talking about the maximum rate of return that they would pay if the stock market does an average of, I think it would have to be like 11% a year. If it did on average 11% per year, every year for the rest of your life, you would get net 7% from that fund. There is no way the stock market's ever going to do that. And because even if you look at the historical rate of return of the market, it includes dividends, with these things do not include dividends. And it also, the market might go up 32% like it did last year. This year may only go up 6%. And, you know, the average might come down to 11%, but you're not going to get it year in and year out. So anyway, they're all a bunch of smoke and mirrors. They're all designed to manipulate people to sell a product. It irritates the living heck out of me, but that's my opinion. I could be, you know, they would say I'm totally wrong and I'm totally offline, off base, but that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it.
No, I'm so appreciative of your explanation. You have no idea.
All right. Well, I appreciate you for asking the question.
Thank
Take
you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
We're going to somebody in traffic.
Maggie Hunter.
Maggie.
Yeah, take it away, Max.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're on an open show.
We are.
And we don't have a single caller on. It's okay because we're almost ready to go to our next break again.
But we do have, we can take one call and they can get on the line for some others. It's a great opportunity when there's no one on right now.
410-922-6680 if you want to get online and ask a question. And tonight is your opportunity to be the guest.
I have an idea.
Your opportunity to...
Noah, do you have a question?
...determine the topics. No. He forgot his headphones.
I want people to know he actually exists so they can hear his voice.
Noah does exist.
He does exist.
And he just came back from California.
That's right.
Yeah, had a good time out there, I guess. And now we got a lot of callers online. And I guess I have to wait. Waiting. I'm waiting, Noah.
We gotta wait.
Oh, we got to wait. So anyway, what are some interesting topics that we can talk about?
Well, I don't know. I'm just thinking about the current news. I'm probably hearing about it in all the other stations, though. But you know, anytime something's going on around the world, stuff going on in Canada, I mean, locking the parliament down, that's a significant event.
Yeah, yeah.
The president has already spoken on it. He's, you know,
right.
Had a U.S. response.
We're going to Bill in Baltimore.
Let's do that.
Bill?
Yes, hi.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Do you have any particular opinion about Exelon purchasing the Potomac Electric, the merger of into Potomac Electric into Exelon?
I mean, Exelon is becoming the powerhouse of the East Coast.
Correct.
And, you know, it's a good thing for people who own Potomac Electric, you know, but as people who got bought out by Exelon for Constellation, it didn't necessarily turn out to be a great deal. But, you know, hey, the utilities were trading on a higher valuation back then, and now they're just kind of getting their footings again.
Getting their footing again, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, so, you know, I think it's a good thing. I think the industry is ridiculously oversupplied in utility companies because of the old monopolistic rules, and you need to come down to maybe 5 or 10 companies in the entire country, and Exelon is obviously going to be one of them.
Yeah, well, Exelon was sort of like bribed or something to put in those windmills out on the east coast, you know, by O'Malley. So,
well, you know, that's what liberals do. They come up with these silly concepts and they push it. They push their agenda, and they probably gave Exelon all kinds of tax breaks and so forth to do something stupid like that, so he could go around and brag that he's got windmills out there. You know,
that's probably the case, yeah.
But anyway,
okay.
You know,
right.
I think it's a good deal for the people in Potomac Electric. You know, you made a good bit of money and you move on.
Right. If you're on Exelon, it wasn't such a good deal, perhaps, maybe.
You know, Exelon's going to be a good company long, long term. But as they go through these consolidations, that might not be the winning company to own right now.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. We're going to Kathy in Westminster. Kathy, how can we help you?
Hi. I have kids, and they're in their late 20s, and they have a little bit of money, an inheritance of $16,000 apiece. And I would like to put it in maybe 2 or 3 or 4 funds and diversify it. Can you tell me what type I should put it in?
Well, so you've got 2 children, 2?
Yes, 2.
That inherited about $15,000 each, right? And so you want to just put it in some funds and diversify it?
Yeah.
Okay. So will your children ever want this money anytime soon?
I'd say maybe 5 or 10 years, maybe.
5 or 10 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do you want them to be more volatile, that they could go up, you know, they might go down a lot and up a lot over time, or do you want them to be much more steady and consistent over time?
I guess consistent.
Okay. So the two funds that I would look at is IVA Worldwide, run by a guy named Charles DeVoe. So that way you get a global feel to the portfolio, and Charles DeVoe is a very careful and cautious investor. And the other one is a local firm here called Greenspring Fund, which invests in U.S. companies, but also invests in some bonds and so forth, and tends to be a very conservative and thoughtful company. And so you're not going to get a lot of wild swings. But you're going to, you know, you're probably going to walk away with a relatively consistent rate of return over time. Now, you know, you're going to, you know, Greenspring this year is actually down 2% this year, last I saw. So, you know, you're going to have those years like this year where it's volatile and you're going to have some down. But, you know, the average small cap stock fund right now this year is down 5 to 10%. And here's this fund does similar things, only down about 2%. So, you know, that's why I tend to like them. They don't tend to go up big, big time, but they also don't tend to have those big volatile swings in these bad years either.
Okay.
All right?
How about exchange-traded funds?
Say that again?
Any ETFs?
Well, you could do ETFs. If you're going to do ETFs, you're going to do the index approach. And if you're going to do the index approach, then I would use one U.S. fund like SPY, S-P-Y, the S&P 500, and then I would do one international index fund like the Vanguard International, I can't remember the symbol on it, ETF, where it's going to look at the global picture of stocks and diversify it that way. But in that, Kathy, you're gonna see a lot of volatility. So, you know, you get a bad year like 2008, you're going to see your portfolio go down 25, 30, 40, 50%. And it's going to happen in those really bad years. So if you're not afraid of that and you're willing to sit through it, then yeah, I would go with the index approach. So that's your two different approaches, the index approach using ETFs or your active managed approach like IVA Worldwide and Greenspring Fund. All right?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Anyway, we have to go to another break, so we get back sort of on time. And it's not a break, Noah. It's a pause. So quit calling it a break. And if you ever call it a break again, we're not going to let you produce anymore. Anyway, take it away, Maggie Hunter.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back from our pause, and we're on an open show today. We have one half of the show left. There's only a couple callers online right now, 410-922-6680. Are you just trying to give me a headache?
It is Hall & Oates.
Well, it might be Hall & Oates, but it's boring the heck out of me. That's good, Noah. I like that. Anyway, I'm going to Michael in Baltimore. Michael, how can we help you?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, and you?
I'm doing great. I have a question for you about credit.
Okay.
I wanted to know, in your opinion, what is the best way to fix one's credit without filing bankruptcy?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Well, if you have to file bankruptcy, you have to file bankruptcy. But if you don't have to file bankruptcy, so you're saying you've got debt issues, your credit's going downhill, and you want to turn it around.
Correct.
Okay. So the difficult part of this is, Michael, we have to know, you know, like, are you so much in debt with not enough income that you're never going to make it? And if that's true, you just have to file bankruptcy, and you're actually going to find that if you file bankruptcy and then you maneuver your finances right after bankruptcy, you'll be able to repair your credit pretty quickly, as opposed to if you continue to beat yourself over the head and you're not going to ever be able to get out of it, then, you know, that's the worst of all scenarios. Now, let's say you can get out of it. Your income's more than sufficient to deal with the debt. What you need to do is you need to focus on the highest interest rate debt and the debt that you have the least amount owed on. So let's say I have four debts. I have one for $10,000, one for $5,000, one for $2,000, and another one for $2,000. So what I'm looking for is the highest interest rate debt. So let's say the $10,000 one has an 8% interest rate, but the two $2,000 ones they have a 12% interest rate. So I'm looking for the debts that I can pay off in full quickly and have the highest interest rate, and the debts that have the, and also have a high interest rate. And those are the ones I'm going to focus on. I'm trying to get the debt paid off as quickly as possible, so the lowest balances, and the highest interest rate I want to get rid of because they're the ones that are costing me the most. As I start to target them and I get one paid off, then I take all that extra cash flow now that I've got and I target that toward the next highest interest rate one and also make sure that I can get through that one as quickly as possible so that I can now focus all my attention over onto the next one. And sometimes I may not want to pay the other ones anything more than the minimum required, and sometimes I may want to just pay them even less than required, knowing that my credit might be get dinged on that. But you know, I have to see each individual situation to try to figure that out. So not knowing which situation you're in, that's what you need to focus on. You know, Dave Ramsey, I don't think much of a lot of what Dave Ramsey does, but this is one thing he does extremely well.
Oh, yeah.
Helping people get out of debt and get their credit back on track. So have you ever considered looking into that, Dave Ramsey's work on getting out of debt?
Well, now that you recommended it, I definitely am.
Okay. Well, you know, again, I don't think a lot of what Dave Ramsey talks about in the sense of financial advising, I think, you know, there are some things I'm very disappointed in he does, but the one thing I think he does really well is help people get out of debt. I mean, that's something that I think he was really created to do, to say, you know, to say the
sure.
least.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's really what he's about. There are a couple other really good websites out there. And, you know, and don't forget Consumer Credit Counseling Services.
I was just thinking about that.
And we've met the people up there, and they do a great job of helping people with that, you know, and so forth. So, you know, those are the things I would suggest, my friend.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Take care. And God bless in getting out of debt, because there's nothing worse than feeling like I've got this ball and chain around me.
Well,
you know,
and the credit card companies, they just pile it on. They pile it on when you're late. So you go over, so they limit these things, and
you know,
then you get
like
all these fees and fees and fees.
I like it when I can legally help a client figure out how to get out of their debt and shaft the credit card companies. I think that's fun, personally. I do. Now, Washington in Pasadena, how can we help you, Washington?
Well, good evening, Drew and Chris. How are you?
We're doing
fine,
great,
sir.
And
how are you?
Okay. Yes, I don't know if you how much you're familiar with the online employment search services.
Yeah.
I'm helping a friend out who's trying to who's underemployed and trying to look for more employment. And the stuff that's coming into his inbox, these are services I've never heard of, because I don't know if, let's say, like Monster is only for professionals, but this person would be more suited for, let's say, retail, hospitality-type jobs and things like that. So I can see where maybe there are some services out there where they advertise themselves as being, well, okay, if you're too small to hire your own HR department, we can do that for you.
Right.
So how do you determine which ones are the legitimate ones and which ones are going to be the ones that are, like, I think one that I came across is I got the impression as you were going through the whole process that what they were really trying to do was trying to sell you on to...
Yeah, you got to be careful with those online services. And the ones I'm most familiar with are Monster.com and LinkedIn and so forth. And those work really well. But, you know, if somebody like your friend, Washington, I don't know why he wouldn't just go look to, you know, some of these temp services.
Sure.
Where he goes in, he works for the temp service. You know, he gets to experience lots of different companies, lots of different employers get to experience him. And, you know, voila, he finds the right match between him and them. You know, I mean, that's a great way to find an employer, and you make money in the interim instead of sitting around waiting and doing interviews and so forth.
Now, again, if you're more along the lines of, in terms of the education and the work experience and things like that, you're not really a professional, but yet you're more into, let's say, retail and hospitality, are they hiring temps?
Sure.
Oh.
Yeah, they do it all the time. Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, they, you know, a lot of these services, you know, they're going to come in and they're going to, you know, they're going to look to the temps to hire people to determine who they're going to hire full-time, because it's a lot easier to get a sense of a temp before they actually bring a person on full-time. So, you know, you just need to find a relative, you need to interview a few temporary companies, you know, because these temporary companies, they do two things. They lease employees out and they are headhunters. In other words, when that temp employee says, hey, I'm going to work for Marriott full time, Marriott pays the temp company to get them to come, because that's part of what temp services are all about.
Well, that's interesting. So besides Kelly, which is probably one of the well-known ones, are there any other names that that come to mind?
I've got one or two on the top of my tongue, but I can't seem to think of them right now.
I don't know. I would just, you can just Google some local in Baltimore.
Actually, I just got a couple business cards from a couple people in the temp service industry.
Oh, okay.
Right up here in the Hunt Valley Business Forum just the other day, and I just can't remember their names off the top of my head. But I can email them to you, Washington, because I'm pretty sure I know who you are, and I know your email. So I can send those to you, and you can see what they come up with. And the nice thing is you can still interview with people while you temp. Because you can call the temp company up and say, hey, you know, I can't come in on October 15th. I got something I got to do, you know?
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, but again, retail companies, everyone's looking for someone that they can outsource that process to.
And, you know, this is a great time to get into
sure.
the temp companies
yeah.
because retailers,
retail.
You get into a retailer and you work hard as a temp during this period of time, and they're going to take notice of those types of people, and they're going to say, man, we got to keep this person on after this. Anyway, Washington, got to run. You take care. And we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. You want to call in right now? I'm pausing for Weather Channel with Scott Larimore.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
From the sky.
Oh, my goodness.
This is an apology.
True, true.
Are your apologies accepted, Noah? That's okay. All right, I got to run. We're going. Mark in Pasadena, how can I help you?
Yes, piggybacking on one of the previous calls, you spoke about paying off the highest credit card debt or highest credit card interest rate.
Right.
So you talked about eliminating debt, but you didn't talk about building credit.
Okay. So the way you build credit is, you know, you've got to make sure your available credit to your income is reasonable. So in other words, if you don't have some cards that you're using, now you always hear this, don't close cards, because you have to have excess available credit to the debt that you do have outstanding, okay? So
right.
that's a good thing. But you've got to also be careful you don't have too much debt outstanding. So you don't want to, let's say you have one card with a credit limit of $10,000 on it and $8,000 of balance outstanding, so you only have $2,000 left, and you've got three other cards with nothing on it. If you eliminate those three cards, you're going to blow your credit score. But if your income is only $50,000 and you have $10,000 credit available on all four cards, you might want to reduce one of those cards to bring your total available debt down to your income. So that's
okay.
one.
My income's close to the 80 range, and I have one department store credit card and no major credit cards, and
But you want to get major credit cards. And you want to use them on a regular basis and pay them off on a regular basis.
Okay, and does that increase your credit rating, or?
It will increase your credit rating as long as you don't have excessive amounts, as long as you use them and pay them off on a regular basis. It will not only will you build points and get cash back and all that kind of good stuff, but you will definitely be raising your credit score. Do you also have a mortgage and a car loan?
Correct. I have no car loan, but I do have a mortgage.
Okay, so your mortgage in and of itself helps
sure.
also.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know if you're timely on your payments on everything, and you've never been late on your department store cards and your mortgage and so forth, having a credit card would be a good thing, but your credit score should be up there fairly nicely right now anyway.
Well, I've rebuilt it. It's not as nice as it should be.
Okay.
I had a little turn in my credit rating probably 8 to 10 years ago, and it's not moving upward as quickly as I thought it would.
Well, one thing you can do also is Capital One has cards for all different people at different levels of credit status and ability, you know, income levels. So you go out there, and they have a card specifically for your where you are.
And you also, Mark, need to go onto your credit score and see what things are out there and get them to take things off that aren't true anymore, okay? Because sometimes that can hurt you. You want to go out there and see what bad things are still out there that are no longer true. I've taken care of that. Get that off of there. I've taken care of that. Get that off of there. If you do that, you'll fix it pretty quick.
I check it monthly, but I haven't thought of removing all those.
And don't hire somebody to do it. Do it yourself. You can do it. It's not that complicated. All right?
Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy. Take care. Jim in Ellicott City, talk quick.
Okay. I have just got a statement from Exelon.
Right.
And it's a ESP account summary.
Okay.
It was something that my brother left about.
He worked for Exelon?
No. My brother worked for BG&E.
Okay, and they got taken over by Exelon. Okay.
Okay. But there's a balance of $14,500. And
did your brother have a will? Did your brother have a will?
Yes, he did.
Who was his beneficiary in his will?
I was one of them.
And who were the rest of them?
A sister and two brothers.
Did you ever open up an estate to liquidate his estate?
They went through all that.
Well, they obviously missed this. So you got to reopen the estate. I'm assuming the account is only in your brother's name.
Actually, it's in my name.
It's in your name?
Yes, it was something he had left to me.
Okay. Well, then it's yours. Then call them up and tell them you want it.
Okay, because I'm losing probably about $1,050 a year.
Yeah. Well, I got to run, but it's your money. If it's in your name, my friend, call them up. Tell them what you want.
I sure will.
All right, buddy. You take care.
Thank you.
All right.
You too. Bye.
Anyway. We're finished.
It's another week.
Next week.
We've got the man who wrote the book.
Jim Monahan.
Next time we'll be different.
Next time we'll be different, or something like that. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Talk Radio 680.